everybody across the land. Here's a special from Sequel Cast, though I don't know what it's gonna be about. Maybe Woody Allen, maybe Spike Lee, maybe Technicolor, maybe 3D, or maybe you just gotta wait and see. 'Cause you're gonna find out after this theme. This Sequel Cast special is a go. This Sequel Cast special is a go. What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? Who knows?
Hello and welcome to the Sequel Cast Special. The Sequel Cast Special is a show that looks at, sometimes we look at movie franchises, but we look at topics about movies on a broader scope than on our other shows, Sequel Cast and Sequel Commentary. You can check out our website at sequelcast.com. Our theme song is written and performed by Mark with a C. And you can listen to all the Sequel Cast shows on Stitcher, an app that lets you listen to podcast streaming, and you can, a great way to get the app is go to stitcher.com/sequelcast, and you'll be automatically subscribed so you can listen to all the Sequel Cast shows, including Sequel Cast Special, Sequel Commentary, and Sequel Cast in one easy way. You can also check out our Amazon links. So next time you want to shop Amazon, go to sequelcast.com, click on the Amazon affiliate link, and we get a cut of that. Every little bit helps. I'm Matt.
And, this is Thrasher.
Thrasher, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
And for this Sequel Cast special, since we're just creeping up into October here, we thought it'd be fun to take a broad look at movies and miniseries and TV shows based on Stephen King novels and short stories. So there's quite a lot of them, and we're not going to cover every one, but we'll try and talk about ones that we've seen and what we've liked, what we haven't liked. We'll have a good time here on Sequel Cast Special.
Yeah, this is a man who has a lot of films with his name on them.
Definitely. And have you seen? So, I mean, when you were a kid growing up, when did you first hear of Stephen King? Did you read any books or anything like that?
I think I first heard of him when I was in second grade, but I don't think I'd actually seen anything based on anything he had written until maybe third or fourth grade. My own secret shame is that I've never actually read anything by Stephen King.
But you've seen a lot of movies and stuff.
I've read a couple of op-ed pieces he's written, but I've never actually read any of his fiction. Not that I haven't.
Why is that?
I've just been reading other things all the time.
Oh, okay. For me, I think I was in middle school. Wait, I'm trying to think. No, I think I might have been, I was either in middle school or elementary school, and we had elementary school, you would get these flyers that you could, once a month as a book club or something, you could order a book through your school.
Oh, yeah. Right,
and I noticed they had a Stephen King book on there called Eyes of the Dragon that was sort of a fantasy young adult novel. And my parents wouldn't let me get it, but I got it later from the library anyway, and I really enjoyed it. And so I thought to branch out into other Stephen King things when I was in sixth grade. I was about 12 years old. I thought, I'll read Cujo, which as a novel was terrifying for a 12-year-old kid to read, I thought. And I just read a whole bunch ever since. I haven't read all of his novels. I think I've probably read in the neighborhood of 24 or so between the novel and the short story collections. And I've seen a lot of the films. By no means I'm an expert, but I've read quite a lot of his stuff over the years, and I'd like to read more. I just find less time to read now than I did when I was younger. So,
well, I will say this: I'm probably going to be reading the novel It soon. My girlfriend Sarah had a family reunion a year ago, and I went with them. And her aunt was just kind of getting rid of some stuff from around her house, and just so happened to have a first edition hardcover of It. So So I grabbed that.
Oh yeah, no, I think the book It is one of Stephen King's better ones that I've read, but it's also 1,000 pages long. It's certainly one of his longer ones, too. But there's a lot more material in there than in the miniseries, but which I'm sure we'll get to in this discussion on Sequel Cast Special on books and TV series and TV shows based off the works of Stephen King. So we're looking, if you want to look along, listeners, we're at Wikipedia. If you just look Stephen King films, there's an article called List of Adaptations of Works by Stephen King. That's what we're looking at. And what's one that jumps out to you, Thrasher? We don't have to go chronologically.
Well, the one, I'll go ahead and start with my overall favorite, which is Maximum Overdrive. I love that movie. It has machines trying to kill people. It has a truck that looks like the Green Goblin. It has Yardley Smith. I just love that movie.
It's the only film directed by Stephen King, and he was supposed to direct more afterwards, but Maximum Overdrive, it was a big flop at the box office. And because of that, you know, he wasn't offered another chance to direct a movie. And it's based off his short story, Trucks. I'd like to revisit Maximum Overdrive. I remember watching it at a friend's house back in high school, and I remember the tone being, you know, it kind of realized it was a silly movie and it was okay with it.
Well, I think that's to its strength, because it's filmed like a B movie, grindhouse kind of drive-in type movie, but all that stuff is intentional. Like you can tell that these are directorial choices that are being made. These aren't just kind of an accident caused by a low budget.
Right. It's like it's a pretty neat point, and part of Stephen King stuff in general, the humor I think can sometimes be a bit corny. And that does come across in Maximum Overdrive, and fans of Spider-Man will be delighted to know one of the trucks has the Green Goblin yeah. on the front of it, right?
Yeah, the toy delivery truck.
Yeah.
Which I want to say there was some sort of legal issue that had caused that they may not have exactly had Marvel's permission when that was done.
I'm not sure. And the music for the film is done by AC/DC, which is also pretty amusing. And yeah, I'd like to revisit it. It stars Emilio Estevez. And like you said, Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson herself, is in the film. And her speaking voice sounds a lot like Lisa Simpson, so that kind of throws me off a bit.
Well, Lisa Simpson's voice is pretty much just like an octave down from her regular speaking voice. But I love that she has a southern twang in this movie.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. Looking at this list of theatrical films based on books and short stories by Stephen King, one that I really enjoy is Creepshow. And this was based on some short stories Stephen King previously written, and some were original ones he wrote for the movie. And the first Creepshow movie was directed by George Romero of Night of the Living Dead fame. I'm just a real sucker for the anthology format, whether it's in a TV show like Tales from the Crypt or in a movie where it's like a bunch of short stories, because it forces you to economize. You can kind of get in, tell a story, and get out without boring the audience too much. And I'm not saying that all of Creepshow is scary. In fact, there's one segment that stars Stephen King in the lead.
The H.P. Lovecraft tribute with the vines and things.
Yeah, The Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill. And it shows, you know, Stephen King perhaps isn't the finest thespian as he is. He's not a great actor as he is a writer, but it seems like he had fun doing it. And in particular, the last segment in Creepshow, they're creeping up on you with the cockroaches, where the guy's apartment gets infested with cockroaches crawling out of everywhere, is the one that really got to me out of this film. And Creepshow is something that had actually a few sequels. You know, they did a Creepshow 2, which George Romero wrote the script, but then it had a different director, but it was based on stories by Stephen King. And Creepshow 3 Stephen King had nothing to do with, except, you know, in with name it's connected to the other ones, but it was direct to video. And supposedly a Creepshow 4 is in development, so who knows. It's why do you think they don't make those movies much anymore, where it's just like a series of short horror films in a feature package?
Because they were very popular for a time in the late yeah. 70s and early 80s. There's even one, there's an earlier Tales from the Crypt movie with that has Tom Baker and Christopher Lee in it, which is pretty creepy. But right. And campy at the same time. I frankly don't know. I assume that it's just a format that producers don't have any confidence in.
Yeah, there was a movie made a few years ago called Trick or Treat that used that format, which I didn't think the movie was that great, but I appreciated it was doing a horror anthology as a movie. You look at all the movies based off of Stephen King books. Arguably, one of the most famous is The Shining, directed by Stanley Kubrick, starring Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall. And
endlessly quotable.
Oh, yeah. I saw this. I saw my dad showed me this film when I was a little kid, but I saw this recently a few years ago. I was at the in-laws for Christmas, and we had a big chunk of time to kill before dinner, and they had Netflix, and I saw Shining was on there, and I said, why don't we watch this? And they're like, okay, sure. And so we put on The Shining right before Christmas dinner. And there's something about Jack Nicholson in that part of the crazed writer that Jack Torrance. Like, it's just like such intensity, and then it's directed by Stanley Kubrick, so it's extremely well shot. And even though there's a lot of changes from the novel and stuff, I think it blows away the miniseries they did based on The Shining later on in 1997 that starred Steven Weber. Did you ever see that miniseries?
You know, no, I didn't. They're probably going to try to top Kubrick, but they're not going to succeed. I didn't feel that they were going to take it in its own direction. I felt that they were going to try to compete with the earlier version. Although, from what I've been told, the miniseries is closer to the source material.
Yeah, I mean, and that is a sense that, you know, Stephen King, author of the book, was really upset with the Stanley Kubrick movie, with how much they had changed. And that's why he made was a producer on the miniseries, you know, several years, almost 20 years later in 97. And I think, you know, the miniseries goes into neat details about the characters, but the Stanley Kubrick film is so goddamn good that trying to do something with the same name, it just almost by default has to come off as weaker by comparison. It's an interesting watch, I think, in the academic sense. And when they were making it, I remember reading that they had real trouble casting the male lead because no one wanted to play a part, an iconic part that Jack Nicholson played in the original for a TV miniseries.
So do you think that's going to become your new Christmas tradition? You'll watch The Shining?
No. I mean, there's a long-lost sequel cast special episode about Christmas specials that got lost due to audio recording issues.
I want to do that one again.
Yeah, we should. We should redo that this year. But no, I don't. It's been a while since I've watched the same movie every Christmas. I think last year I saw Bad Santa for the first time, and I really enjoyed that. So I'm hoping to see that this year again around the holidays.
So now you know what upset all those parents.
I don't think Bad Santa was that upsetting. I just think it's...
Well, I just remember your stories when you worked at the Blockbuster where there were people who rented that movie for their kids not realizing it was R-rated.
Oh, yeah, no, there was a lot of those. That's true. But, you know, it has a big R right there on the cover of the videotape. At least at the time, they made that stuff kind of obvious. So, I don't know. If you're not educated enough to check on things... sometimes you get what's coming to you. What's another one of these Stephen King theatrical films?
Well, actually, let's just go ahead and go into the giant one, Children of the Corn. I have seen every Children of the Corn movie.
Including Children of the Corn Genesis? including the latest, Children of the Corn Genesis?
Yes, I believe I did.
Oh, okay. I have never seen a Children of the Corn movie, but you wrote a really fun essay about them over on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast.
Yeah, the these all ended up streaming on various services online. So I was always a fan of the first one, but then Sarah and I we spent a week where we watched every film in the series and managed to get it all the way through. I really like the original Children of the Corn. It has just the right level of creepy children and creepy farm shenanigans, but it really starts to go weird as you get into the sequels.
I'd like to check them out myself. What did you think about the TV movie they did of Children of the Corn in 2009?
You know, that might be the only one I didn't see.
Okay. I haven't seen it either. I need to watch some of these. I'm really intrigued by Children of the Corn 3 Urban Harvest that takes place in Chicago, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a good one? No.
No, I mean, well, none of them are all that good. They just take different liberties, you know, with the source material. I know as I say in my review, eventually we do get one where the corn is literally it's the corn killing people. They've all blurred together in my mind, but there's one that takes place in an apartment in the middle of the city, and where there's like a little corn, there's like a little cornfield to the side of, to in the yard, but there's a scene where people start finding corn kernels scattered around the apartment, and there's a scene where a woman is taking a bath, and corn stalks grow around her and like drown her in the bath. It's got to have children. It's got to have corn. That's in the title. Other than that, no real connection to the rest of the films.
Right.
And that's one of the things with Children of the Corn. All the sequels are alternately embracing or rejecting the original source material.
Okay. I was going to say Children of the Corn is based off a short story by Stephen King that I recall being, you know, very creepy, but it's also like really short. It's not fleshed out that much. And if you're going to read Stephen King, I'd almost recommend starting out with one of his short story collections, because his short stories are really, I think all his stuff is pretty good, but his short stories in particular are a good way to get his taste of his writing and kind of read a bunch of different styles on things, on the way he writes different kind of scenarios. It's a good way to get exposed to a lot of Stephen King in a short amount of time.
Oh, one last comment on Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
Despite the varying quality, Children of the Corn 666, Isaac's Return, is a lot of fun.
Okay. Is Isaac a character in the other films?
Isaac was the cult leader in the first film. One of the little kids, and they get the same actor returns to play him. And the interesting thing about that actor is he still has those kind of childlike proportions. Now, mind you, you have to ignore sort of the continuity of the films, explaining why he's still alive and why this stuff is still going on. But if you can ignore that, it's still a very funny film. I'm not funny. It's an enjoyable, campy film.
Yeah. One of these films on here that jumps out to me is The Lawnmower Man from 92. Based off a Stephen King story, but it's so loosely based off it that Stephen King sued the producers of the film, making them take the credit based on the story by Stephen King out of the film.
Because the
short story, The Lawnmower Man, it's been a long time since I've read it, but as I recall, it's about a guy, you know, offers to mow people's lawns, and then this family comes home, and this guy's totally naked, eating the grass and swallowing it, and that's how he mows lawns. It's a very weird, bizarre piece.
I don't think I would enjoy that kind of twist ending. It always makes me think of the Flintstones. Like, at some point, he turned the camera with his mouth full of grass. It's a living!
Right. It's a very strange story. But in the movie The Lawnmower Man, starring Pierce Brosnan, it's about a scientist that's into virtual reality and doing experiments on artificial intelligence. And he has a neighbor that's retarded, that's a lawnmower man. And he hooks him up to the virtual reality machine. The character literally is mentally deficient.
No. That's not what I mean. He's not a lawnmower man. Lawnmower man isn't a job. He's a groundskeeper.
Okay. But, yeah, he takes the groundskeeper, the titular lawnmower man, if you will, and hooks him up to the virtual reality machine. And he gets really smart, and he also kind of gets the computer powers in real life so he can summon holograms of bees. And he has sex with the lady in the virtual reality world. Virtual reality was big in movies in the 90s. But
well, the concept was big, but you never quite saw it.
Not until The Matrix, perhaps, if that counts as virtual reality, kind of.
Well,
you know?
the thing with Lawnmower Man is it was limited by the technology of the time. It does look, you know, its rendition of cyberspace does look pretty dated. Although in many ways, I think that helps it. I like that it doesn't look sleek and modern. I like the early CGI aesthetic that the virtual reality sequences have. But yeah, like, it starts out as kind of a dark Flowers for Algernon story, and then he becomes a supervillain.
And The Lawnmower Man did spawn a sequel in The Lawnmower Man 2 Beyond Cyberspace,
which I have not seen, but the guy who played Max Headroom is in it.
Yes.
As Job, the Lawnmower Man.
Yep, he plays Job. But Job in the original film is played by Jeff Fahey. So Lawnmower Man, I think, is a real guilty pleasure. It's not great. It's damn silly. It has almost nothing to do with the short story. But I enjoy it.
Because this is one that a lot of people don't think of, The Shawshank Redemption.
Right, that's a good point. Yeah, Shawshank Redemption. I've only seen that movie once. I should probably watch it again.
Really?
I remember thinking, this is good, but I was not blown away by it. It stars, you know, Morgan Freeman and Tim Robbins. Is this one of your favorites, Thrasher?
I absolutely love this movie. I think it's a great story. It's very, very well told. It leaves an impression on me every time I see it. And the thing that makes it a guilty pleasure is I love mining comedy out of the Morgan Freeman's narration. I remember when it first came to Shawshank Prison. There's a British comedy troupe, the Dead Ringers. They do a lot of obviously from the name, impression based comedy. But they have a running gag on their show where one of their cast members does a Morgan Freeman impersonation and starts talking about how he remembers people. And it's just, I don't know, it's just, it's something I like. I like mining this for that kind of comedy.
And it should be mentioned that Shawshank Redemption is based off the Stephen King novella, Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, from the novella collection Different Seasons. And it's directed by Frank Darabont, who later directed other movies based on Stephen King stuff, such as The Green Mile and The Mist. So... let's look up.
Oh, hey, here's another one of my favorites. We were talking about anthology films earlier.
Yeah.
One of them is, of course, Tales from the Dark Side. The Cat from Hell segment. I love that segment.
I've never seen the Tales from the Dark Side movie. That was also a TV show, right?
Yes, it was made into a TV show.
What's the Cat from Hell segment about?
Oh, it's really great. Well, first, it stars Buster Poindexter. Buster Poindexter plays a hitman, and this creepy old man hires him. He's like, I want you to come to my house and take out somebody. So, you know, so Buster Poindexter goes to the guy's house, and it turns out he wants to take out a hit on a black cat that's been living on his property. And what you end up finding out in a really creepy monologue delivered by the old man was that this family's very, very rich, and the way they got their money is they own a pharmaceutical company that was started by, like, his father or grandfather or whatnot, and that the drug that made them millionaires and billionaires was tested on cats, and, like, hundreds of cats died testing this drug. And as a result, you know, he's really paranoid about cats. He's positive the cats want to take revenge on this family. So cats have always been forbidden on the family property. But he has two sisters who are also old and crazy who took in this stray. And so they're going out of town for the weekend, and he wants that cat killed. And at first the hitman thinks it's a joke, but then is like, well, the guy's money talks. I'm gonna kill this cat. And the bulk of it, it's kind of like this, like a dark Warner Brothers cartoon. It's like just a dark game of cat and mouse with a hitman doing all these things to kill this cat, and this cat just will not die. And it goes for a real shocker ending, which is it's not so much a shocker as it is disgusting and disturbing, but it does what so few horror movies do, which is punish the audience. And I love horror movies that punish the audience. So definitely check out that segment.
Yeah,
Buster Poindexter got more acting work. He's really good as the hitman.
A more recent film based off a Stephen King story that I enjoyed is called 1408. It came out in 2007, starring John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson. And in it, John Cusack plays an author who kind of writes these books about haunted places all across America, but he doesn't really believe in ghosts. And this one hotel has the room 1408 that nobody ever stays in. Everyone thinks it's haunted. So he stays in it as a challenge. But as he stays in the room, he kind of slowly goes crazy and starts to hallucinate things. And even though it's John Cusack in the lead in a serious part, the film kind of grows on you. And a fun scene is early in the film, John Cusack, you know, he's really trying to convince the manager of the hotel, played by Samuel L. Jackson, that he wants to stay in that room. And Samuel L. Jackson tells him, don't go in there, it's a scary fucking room. But it's just sort of a neat kind of, like, haunted room story that takes a neat bunch of plot twist. And what's really bizarre is on the DVD and Blu-ray, it features several alternate endings of the film. Because, like, it's almost like they couldn't make up their mind whether the guy lives or dies at the end, or what happens to the room, or what goes on.
You know what would have been great is if it was like a William Castle movie and the audience could vote on the fate of the protagonist.
Yeah, not quite, but I recall when I rented it, I was watching it with my wife, and she was like, I don't like that ending. And we watched the like three or four different endings, and one of the other ones, she's like, I like this one the best. But that it has so many different ones is a pretty unique. So I thought that one was pretty enjoyable. Is there another one of these films you want to talk about?
Well, what do you think about The Running Man? That's a movie that's ahead of its time.
So, yeah, The Running Man was based off a novel by Richard Bachman, and Stephen King used the pen name Richard Bachman to write novels in the late 70s, early 80s, and he later released a few novels in the 90s under that pen name. And part of it, I think, was an experiment to see if people would buy novels and stuff if it didn't have the Stephen King name on it, just to see how it would do. But he also, you know, wrote some stuff when he was a lot younger under that pen name, too. I don't quite know all the details, except that stuff leaked out to the press that it was Stephen King, and Stephen King had to come out himself and say, yeah, it's true, and this is why he did it. But, yeah, The Running Man, it's basically like an early version of a reality show is what they're sort of describing, about a guy in the movies played by Arnold Schwarzenegger goes in this game show where he kind of like a gladiatorial fight to the finish.
Well, it's condemned between
these different guys.
Yeah. Fight to the death against these called running men, fight to the death against these sort of professional wrestling type champions. And if they can survive, they're supposed to get a full pardon and go on to live wonderful lives in a better place. But of course, that's not what's really going on.
Right, I remember in this film, Richard Dawson as the host of the show is pretty enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
I recall The Running Man being a lot of fun. I haven't seen it in a while. The novel is a lot darker in tone. And the guy in the novel, the main character, is doing his, like, wife is really sick. I think his child is dying, and he does The Running Man show to get money to save his family. And the tone in the book reminds me a lot more of something like the movie Blade Runner or something like that. Did you like The Running Man?
I really did. It touches on a lot of the same things as the original Rollerball, which is another one of my favorite science fiction films.
Yeah, sure.
But it goes for a much more exciting pulp feel, which I think is appropriate just based on the nature of television. And I don't know, it feels... The longer I live, the less this movie is escapist fantasy and the more it is the world I'm living in.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's... you think Stephen King is just like kind of scary stuff, but he's done, you know, as we talked about with Shawshank Redemption and Running Man. I mean, he's done stuff that is varied tonally quite a bit throughout his career. You know, one of his they've been trying to make into a movie lately, and the financing keeps on falling through. Is that Dark Tower? Right. He's done a series of. I think recently now it's 8 books and several comic books called The Dark Tower, the first of which is Dark Tower the Gunslinger, but there's little elements that connect to these Dark Tower series in his other novels and short stories. And I've read the first 2 novels, and I've always meant to finish the series. I just haven't. I should probably get back to that at some point before I die. But
When's that going to be, by the way?
Hopefully not anytime soon. I think I'm in fairly good health, so keep my fingers crossed.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So you never read Stephen King, so do you know anything about Dark Tower?
I know what friends of mine who have read it have told me.
Yeah, I mean, it starts out as a sort of conventional kind of like dark Western. I like to think of it like post-apocalyptic Western sort of thing. And then later it gets into time travel and all this crazy stuff. It's a lot going on. It's really intense. And I need to read more of the book series to fully form an opinion on it. So it is one of those things they've been trying to make as a movie for a while, and we'll see if it happens. I think the current plan, they were... director Ron Howard and producer Brian Grazer were trying to pitch was to do a trilogy of films, but then also do a TV series in there in between the movies, which is pretty ambitious. And I don't know if that's ever been done as like a big package deal. And I'm not even. Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking it kind of boggles my mind that this movie hasn't been made because Hollywood is so franchise hungry. And this is a proven
right.
series. It's based on Stephen King, who has a proven uh-huh. track record.
Yeah.
It's shocking that it hasn't been made. That being said, I don't think I think it would be better rather than doing it as movies to do it as an epic series like Game of Thrones.
Right. No, I think you're right. There's a lot of dense stuff going on in the books and short stories and comic books in the series, and I think also because it's a Western. And that sort of thing, like Westerns don't always do very well. It's kind of a niche genre.
It's not a niche. It's just that
Hollywood
got so oversaturated with Westerns and then released so many terrible Westerns that it assumed that the Western was dead.
Yeah.
And sadly, we're still living with a lot of that fallout.
Well, and every once in a while, there'll be a Western that does really well, and then it seems to go fallow for a while. For whatever reason, I'm not quite sure why. But I hope someone pulls the trigger and makes some Dark Tower films or miniseries or whatever they end up doing. Because I think that'd be pretty neat. We've talked a lot about films based on Stephen King novels and short stories. Why don't we talk about some of the TV miniseries? Have you seen any of these, Crasher?
The only one I know for sure I've seen is Rose Red. I've never seen it all in one go, but I'm pretty sure I've seen the whole thing just over several years of seeing different episodes at different times.
What do you think of it?
Sadly, the experience was kind of tainted by the fact that I did see all the episodes so spread out and out of order.
Mm.
I have a very confused impression of it.
Yeah, Rose Red. I mean, for a while in the late '90s, in particular, Stephen King would write original. Screenplays to be done as TV movies, usually directed by Mick Garris, but not always. And Rose Red was one of those. And the story of the development of Rose Red, which is a haunted house story in the most literal sense, is, do you recall in the late 90s, Steven Spielberg produced a remake of The Haunting?
I recall that.
And it was directed by John DeBont, I believe. And, anyway, Stephen King was originally involved in that. It ended up not going with his version of it, but he took ideas from that and did it as Rose Red. So that's a weird kind of connection there. I guess since you haven't seen a lot of these miniseries...
Don't let that stop you.
Oh, okay. Well, you haven't read... So you've never seen the miniseries It with all your Tim Curry fandom?
Well, I always thought that was a movie. Was that a miniseries?
No, it was a miniseries. It's a 4-hour miniseries.
Okay, then I have seen it. For some reason, I always thought it was just a really long movie.
Nope. But I do have a funny story about that. So when Stephen King's It came out on DVD, for a long time, I don't know if they still do this. They don't do this with Blu-rays, but on DVDs, they would sometimes put stuff on one half of the DVD, and then you'd flip the disc over.
Oh, yeah, I had one of those. It was regular on one side, widescreen on the other.
Right, but for whatever reason, because this It miniseries are 4 hours, they put part one, which was 2 hours, on one side, and part two on the other side. And when I worked at Blockbuster Video, these teenagers rented it because they recalled it being scary, and they only saw the second half of it, and they didn't see the first half. And they returned it, and they're like, man, you know, it was okay, but it didn't have all that stuff with the kids in it. And I'm like, oh, that's in the first half. You need to flip the disc. And they're like, oh, man, but they already returned the disc, so they would have had to rent it again to see the whole film. I guess I could have not been an asshole and slipped them the disc and whatever, but...
If there's a way to do that, I know some...
you can always do something.
Video, you know, some places they track that stuff, there'd be a fee or something.
Yeah, I mean... But anyway, with the... Yeah, the It miniseries, like I was saying, the book is 1,000 pages. And there's a lot they leave out from the book, but even then, I think there's some pretty good stuff. Memorably, Tim Curry plays Pennywise the Clown. You also have... John Ritter is in there in a part.
Seth Green as well.
Oh, is one of the kids, really? Shit.
Yeah. I lost a bet to Jersey Jason because I thought it was before his time in films. But I lost $20 because it turns out it really was Seth Green.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, so Seth Green plays the young character that's an asthmatic, I think. Pretty neat. But yeah, it's about, among other things, you know, a children's nightmare is coming to life. And Tim Curry is masterful as Pennywise the Clown.
Oh, it's so
good. And they've been trying to get a feature film off the ground. And they've been writing scripts of it for the past year or two. And I'll be curious if they end up making it as a film. And if they do, if they'd cast Tim Curry again as the voice of Pennywise or go something completely different.
Tim Curry is Pennywise.
Yeah.
I can't imagine who you could do that could turn, that could just give it that same, you know, terrifying and whimsical voice.
Although, speaking of scary clowns, Tim Curry will be voicing Ginger Clown in Ginger Clown 3D.
Nice.
I believe set to come out in 2012.
Beep, beep!
Yeah. Looking over this list of miniseries, you know, it wasn't the first miniseries they did, but one of the bigger ones is the one based off The Stand, which I think is like 8 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty lengthy. The book, again, is 1,000 pages, one of the older Stephen King novels. And Stephen King scripted a whole lot of these miniseries. Rob Lowe is in it. Molly Ringwald is in it. You get a lot of interesting actors in there. Matt Frewer, you know, Max Headroom, is in it, too, as Trash Can Man.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting in that it's an epic story about a plague hitting the United States and people bind, group together to face evil. But at the end, it gets a bit really literal with its religious metaphor of God versus the devil, where literally the hand of God comes down and saves everything. In spite of that, I found it enjoyable. You talked about Maximum Overdrive earlier, and a while later in 97 they did a TV movie called Trucks, which was another adaptation of that same story.
Never seen that.
I've never seen that either, but it has really cheesy box art of a truck with like a skeleton on the headlight or something, as I recall. So, but I've never seen it.
Speaking of television, The Langoliers.
Yes.
Which, I'm not really all that into that one. I love Dean Stockwell, and I think it's got an interesting premise, but I don't enjoy it. I think it's not executed as well as that premise demands.
Yeah, you know, I've never seen that miniseries. I did read the novella it was based off of, but it's been so long, I recall it has something to do with an airplane, right?
Yes, like it's an airplane that gets trapped in the previous moment, and there are these sort of cosmic scavengers called Langoliers who eat the past so that it's not there anymore.
And it stars Bronson Pinchot of Beverly Hills Cop fame.
He was standing tall
on the winds of my dreams. Yeah.
Rise and fall.
I don't know the rest of the lyrics.
Okay. Storm and thunder, the wind and rain, I'm bound for better days. Ah!
It's my life, it's my dream, nothing's gonna stop me now. Have you been to the website where they have a Perfect Strangers video game?
Perfect Strangers mini game. That is shockingly good.
It's way better than you think it would be.
Yes.
Let me try and find the website for it.
Hold well, on. let's finish talking about Stephen King.
Okay.
That seems like that's a weird tangent. People came here to listen to us talk about some goddamn Stephen King movies. They don't want to hear about.
Yeah,
some
you can check out the Perfect Strangers video game based on the TV show at the website nothingsgonnastopmenow.com. It's very, very funny. And Bronson Pinchot was in the Stephen King miniseries, The Langoliers, as we just were talking about. So we can go back to talk a bit about some more about movies, you know, based on Stephen King stuff. The Mist I've been meaning to see. I've never seen it, though, but I understand it's pretty good. Did you see that one?
No, I know Sarah saw it, but sadly I have not seen it. Oh, and actually, this is a person we haven't had a chance to talk about. Gary Busey, who was in Silver Bullet.
Oh, I've never seen the movie of Silver Bullet. I've read the novel, Cycle of the Werewolf.
I like it. It's actually a very entertaining movie. And
yeah?
And Gary Busey does a decent performance in it. I mean,
stars Corey
Haim
as
the
kid,
Gary
right?
Busey we know today.
And Corey Haim's in it as the kid.
Yes, I believe so.
Yep.
Good werewolf action at the end.
Nice. That's always important. Because the werewolf, for whatever reason, is a monster that can look terrible if done incorrectly. You can do a shitty vampire, it looks okay, but...
Well, they do... Thankfully, like, it's like the shark in Jaws. They don't linger on the werewolf for too long. You see sort of just the right amount of the werewolf.
You know, one movie that I think is pretty good, but I thought the novella was a bit better, is Apt Pupil, which came out in 98. The movie, or the short story, or the novella, I'm so sorry, terrified me. And it's, you know, it's a Stephen King story that's less supernatural, and that it's about a teenage kid is doing some research on an old man that's a neighbor of his, and he discovers the old man neighbor used to be a Nazi in World War II. He used to be in the SS, I believe. And he confronts them about this, and he gets corrupted by the old man neighbor and becomes kind of a neo-Nazi himself. And it's, I found really, really disturbing. The old man is played by Ian McKellen, and the teenager is played by Brad Renfro. And it's directed by Bryan Singer, who did Usual Suspects and later went on to do the X-Men 1 and 2 and stuff like that. So I just found this story really, I guess, more believable than some of the other stuff. And also around the time I read it, like the Columbine high school shootings happened.
Oh, yeah.
So that might have been in my mind, too. But At Pupil, I think, is a pretty good Stephen King film, but I thought the story somehow got... The original novella got under my skin a bit more.
Oh, actually, right next to... right next to Maximum Overdrive, as far as my favorite Stephen King movies go, Misery.
That one's great.
Oh, I love Misery. I love the premise. I love the execution. Yeah. Kathy Bates is amazing.
Based on the novel, yeah, starring Kathy Bates and James Caan.
No, I just love that. Like now that I have written material, and now that I meet people who I don't know who have read stuff I've written, and on rare occasion encountered people. Encountered people who would describe themselves as fans of my work. Like, there is, like, a special horror of, like, being trapped with that fan that you can't stand.
Have you had, like, a creepy fan yet? That experience?
No, I'm thankful to say that I haven't.
Okay, well, that part's good, at least.
Oh, actually, no, I take that back. I did sign a book I'd worked on for somebody who then tried to hit on my girlfriend.
That's classy.
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole story behind that we really don't have time to go into.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Misery, the film, is directed by Rob Reiner, but the screenplay was by William Goldman, who... among other things, he wrote the book and the screenplay for Princess Bride. He wrote the screenplay for All the President's Men. You know, he's written a lot of great stuff over the years. And in his, he did some nonfiction, and in one of the more recent ones from 2000, I guess it's not that recent anymore, called Which Lie Did I Tell? More Adventures in the Screen Trade. He talks a bit about the making of Misery. And he said they had a really hard time making the movie casting James Caan as the male lead, as the writer. And he said, in retrospect, he wishes they would have casted Richard Gere in the lead.
Really?
Yeah. But he said, you know, it's a really tough part in that you're a guy that's stuck in a bed for a lot of the film.
I could see Richard Gere in that part, but I really think personally James Caan nails it.
No, James Caan is good, and in the book, Which Lie Did I Tell, William Goldman says James Caan did a great job. He just was saying Richard Gere is someone they never considered at the time, but perhaps they should have. And yeah, I mean, Kathy Bates is just so creepy, and yet the argument she makes for why she does what she does kind of makes sense in a way. When she says, like, oh, this ending is a cheat, and you're going to write my favorite ending, and it just gets... really intense, you know, and I, again, this is one of those movies that makes me think, like, it would be a, what would you call it? It would make sense as a stage play as well, I think.
You know, it would make a real kick-ass stage play. There's also a brilliant, Saturday Night Live sketch where, Dana Carvey, it starts as a church chat sketch, and then Dana Carvey retires the church lady and says he's never going to do the church lady again. And then he and John Lovitz get into a car accident, and Roseanne Barr finds Dana Carvey and ties him to a bed and forces him to do the church lady for her. And there's all these great Misery references.
Wow.
And then John Lovitz shows up, kills Roseanne, but then kills Dana Carvey and steals the church lady costume. Good comedy. Oh, and hell, because we got to talk about John Lovitz some more. There's a brilliant episode of The Critic. I believe it's the second episode.
You're right, yeah.
It's all about Misery, where Jay Sherman starts dating his number one fan, who then kidnaps him and forces him to review movies for her.
One of my favorite running jokes on The Critic is they would get Jay Sherman to wear promotional material from different movies.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a pair of boxers that said Backdraft.
Oh, yeah. He also had a pair of socks that said My Left Foot.
Yeah. There's a lot of real funny visual jokes and jokes all throughout The Critic. Highly recommended if you've never seen that series. It's on DVD. It's out of print, but I don't think it's too hard to find.
And as they say in the audio commentary, you can download the entire show off Kazaa, but you shouldn't. Oh, and hey, great Stephen King gags in the other great Stephen King gags. There's an episode where Jay Sherman tries to win another Pulitzer Prize, and Jimmy Breslin is like is reading like what he's going to get. Check for $5,000. $5,000? Stephen King gets that for writing Boo on a cocktail napkin. I love Jimmy Breslin doing a joke.
On Family Guy, they did a pretty funny Stephen King gag where I believe Brian the dog was driving his car and he accidentally runs over someone. And he says, "Oh my God, oh, you." And the guy he runs over is kind of injured and okay. And he walks up to the car and he says, oh my God, are you Stephen King? I'm sorry, I hit you ran over you with the car. And the guy says, "No, I'm Dean Koontz." And then Brian backs up the car back over Dean Koontz to run over him several times. And I mean, that was a big Stephen King thing in his real life when he got hit by a car and was heavily medicated and had to go through a lot of rehab to kind of recover himself from that terrible accident. But as part of the rehab, while he was in the hospital, because Stephen King is nothing but if not prolific, he wrote a novel called Dreamcatcher, which was made into a film. Did you ever see this one? Came out in 2003.
Yes, I did.
It's fucking weird. And the novel is this weird, too. It's like Stephen King combines all his novels and adds aliens. And it makes no sense, but I think it's a campy delight. I don't think it was meant to be campy, though. That's the thing. But what did you think of it?
I was kind of... I don't want to say confused or befuddled, but I felt so neutral about that film after having seen it. I felt like I really wanted to like it and I really should have liked it, but it just failed to leave any kind of impression on me.
Hmm. I think you should give it a rewatch. It's just so bizarre when you have little alien things called shit weasels. And you get a climactic fight between a guy that turns into a scorpion fighting an alien. It's...
Yeah.
Dreamcatcher goes all over the place. Truly.
Oh, speaking of another movie that's kind of all over the place, Cat's Eye.
Yeah?
It's an anthology film. It's all based on Stephen King stories. But the segment that everyone... will remember is the third and final segment, General, about a little girl played by Drew Barrymore who's harassed by a troll that lives in their house that wants to kill her.
Huh.
And the cat protects her from the troll. It's a nice kind of little urban fantasy tale, and it's kind of disturbing to watch because the troll's this tiny little thing. It's like half the size of the cat. But they do all these things with forced perspective and blown-up props to make it look tiny. And it's just really disturbing to see this thing move. Although it has kind of a Frank Welker voice.
Right. I've never seen Cat's Eye, but that's when... Yeah, certainly in the 80s and the 90s were the heyday of all the Stephen King adaptations, huh? Because you still they still do some of them every few years, and as miniseries you still... like in 2011, they just came out with Bag of Bones, based on a novel, and that stars Pierce Brosnan. And I hear that one's pretty good, but I've never seen it. But they've done so much stuff based on Stephen King short stories and novels over the years. I'm sure they'll continue to release a whole bunch more.
Frankly, we could probably revisit this topic every year.
Yeah, probably, and have new stuff to talk about. Because there's obviously a lot we haven't talked about and a lot we haven't seen. So... I guess in closing on this episode of Sequel Cast Special, looking back over this big list of films and miniseries based off Stephen King novels and short stories, is there one you want to recommend that you haven't talked about?
The movie that set this whole topic off, as my girlfriend and I watched Pet Sematary last weekend, and... we both really, really liked it, and that's what got me thinking of, we should talk about maybe Stephen King.
I've never seen Pet Sematary, or Pet Sematary 2.
Pet Sematary is... it's really good.
Is it? Okay.
It's just the right level of twisted. It slowly ramps up the weirdness. It's kind of... you kind of have to, I guess you kind of have to invest in it, because out of context, some of the stuff later on with the little kid comes off as a little bit comical, because they still, you know, but generally it's effective, and it's a neat, creepy premise, and also the casting is brilliant. I love that, excuse me, I love that they've got the guy who played the original... The original Herman Munster, whose name sadly is now escaping me, is in the film.
Okay.
Oh, Fred Gwynne. That's what it was. Fred Gwynne. Fred Gwynne plays the old man who is their neighbor, and it's just such a great character, the great voice. Well, hello there. You don't want to go to that road. It's dangerous on that road. The ground went sour. It's just a great kind of. It's just like a great old fashioned character. You don't get old men characters like that anymore, I feel.
Looking at this list, one that sticks out to me, I don't think it's one of the best films based off of Stephen King story, but I recall it being pretty good. Is Hearts in Atlantis, which it was a novel that was a collection of novellas, and Hearts in Atlantis is just based off one of the novellas, the one called Low Men in Yellow Coats. And it stars Anthony Hopkins, and it's a story about a little boy, and I believe it's like in the 50s or 60s, something like that. I think it's probably the 50s. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've seen it. And he has a relationship with the old man neighbor played by Anthony Hopkins, who was secretly being pursued by... these strange people that could be government FBI agents, but you don't know like if the old man is crazy or not. And it's a really, there's some sentimentality in it, but I think the performances are pretty good. Even though I think the titular story in the novella collection Hearts in Atlantis, which is called Hearts in Atlantis, is better than the one they adapted, than the story they adapted for the movie Hearts in Atlantis. So I'm sure I just confused the audience by that convoluted description, but there you go. Okay, well, we've spent a decent amount of time, I think, touching on various Stephen King films and miniseries and so forth on this SequelCast special. Be sure to check out other episodes of SequelCast special. And our other Sequel Cast shows, such as Sequel Cast, where we look at movies in a franchise one at a time, and Sequel Commentary, where we do audio commentaries for movies that usually are sequels, at sequelcast.com. And, leave us reviews on iTunes, check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast. And for Sequel Cast special, this is Matt.
And this is Thrasher.
Saying...
You don't want to go down that road. Ground is sour.
Meow.
Corn!
What's a cat? What is a cat in Pet Sematary, isn't it?
Yep, and in Cat's Eye.
Oh, very good. There you go. All right, well, good night. I gotta cook some dinner. Yummy, yummy.